Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
united. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, looking at a very busy week in the Capitol, but first, wish I was there. Attorney General Call, asked for a hearing on a bill that would permanently fund the testing of rape kits, a hearing that the committee chair, Sanfilippo, now says will be held, voting concerns by those who are blind and visually impaired, an emotional plea from a vet for a bill that would help vets with tuition at private colleges and universities, and Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm says the Affordable Care Act sign-up deadline, December 15th, is more important than ever. Wish I was there.
The goal is to ensure that we have a uniform process for the submission of sexual assault kits to the state crime labs. I have yet to hear from a single member of the legislature who opposes this legislation. That's why we are here today calling on Representative Joe Sanfilippo to schedule a public hearing on this issue.
Many voters with disabilities, when they arrive at the polls, find the equipment is not set up properly, not ready to go. If I want to vote and don't have access to that equipment, I either need to have someone mark my ballot for me, might be a family member, or someone, election official, marking it for me, which decreases my confidence as a voter about whether my ballot was marked correctly.
Wisconsinites send over $14 billion a year out of state to pay for the fossil fuels that power our communities. That's money that could be kept right here in Wisconsin.
I'm the mom of a veteran, and I never known anything about the military service until he started. And I really got to witness the sacrifices that people make when they join the military. And I just feel, as a Wisconsin resident and a member of an American citizen, it is really important for us to continue to support our veterans in any way possible, and by allowing something as simple as having financial benefits at a private school, it's so important.
We continue to push against the narrative that the ACA is on the decline. What we really need to do is make it affordable and more affordable, expand Medicaid for those who really are struggling, as you saw in the top lines of that graph, to maintain their coverage so that we are filling that gap and everyone has access to insurance they can afford.
Before I really dove into the Foxconn conversation, I had a good feeling for what was happening as far as economic development goes in the rest of the state. And I also wanted to be able to say, let's not always talk about Foxconn, because there's so much else going on. And if we want small businesses to access economic development programs and things like that, I don't want them to think that economic development in Wisconsin is only Foxconn.
Wisconsin made the national news today in a lot of, or this week, in a lot of very tragic ways, with the school shootings at Waukesha South and the incident in which an officer shot a student who had stabbed him. And then you had other reports of schools being threatened and closed. So we were in the national news. Let's just go down some of the responses. First of all, from Governor Evers, JR, if legislators listen to the school districts that they represent, those districts can tell them that kids are struggling more than ever. There's a need for some really specialized help. Your thoughts on the governor's response to these incidents?
Interesting that if I caught all of the comments he made, he didn't make a direct appeal for any new gun legislation. Talked about mental health funding, but didn't. I mean, remember, he called a special session on expanded background checks, yes, and red flag laws that didn't go anywhere. I did not really hear him, like, you know, he talked about more action, but not specifically talk about those two bills. That was kind of interesting. Some eyebrows were raised this week because of a tweet from Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes,
yes,
after the first incident. His tweet was basically WTF. I'll let the audience at home figure out what those letters stand for, but CC'd Speaker Robin Voss, Senator Scott Fitzgerald,
right,
basically a message about we need to do something. The pushback from Republicans was, well, these weren't gun incidents, right? You know, the kid with a BB gun, I think, at one,
yes,
a knife at the other. So you have this kind of debate about the governor calling for, he did call for, though, more mental health funding. Republicans saying, yeah, but, you know, you vetoed out this piece of mental health funding. Democrats saying, well, yeah, but you guys reduced what he wanted for this piece of mental. I mean, it's an interesting discussion going on about
what. But it was interesting. It was kind of an epidemic in Wisconsin because in the Madison School District, you've got two boys in the Madison School District, a pellet gun fired from a bus struck two students. So it just goes on. Okay, let's look at what Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said. Listening to news reports describe how safety improvements were used yesterday is confirmation that Republicans and Democrats made the right choice in working together to fund that program. Now, this morning I asked DOJ, we have had we've spent a lot of money on school safety grants, and the total, JR, is $60.4 million has been paid, $93.2 million has been approved. So I guess the public, parents out there, will have to decide how much safer their schools are.
Remember, this was done as a response to concerns about school shootings, what was going on. It was a Republican answer under Governor Walker of putting more money into school safety measures, such as, like in my kids' schools, the doors are more secure when you walk in than was before. Those are measures they said would help kind of prevent somebody from getting into a school and causing an incident. And Fitzgerald also praised those school officers, safety officers, who are there to respond to
And they should
like
be praised, right. Okay. Senator Ron Johnson, school violence incidents across Wisconsin, quote, remind us that we do not possess the capability to completely prevent someone from bringing a weapon to school. Thoughts on that? I mean, there's an impasse in Washington. We're not going to see any significant changes in gun laws.
No, not in Washington, D.C. I thought it was interesting talking to people that A.G. Josh Call was one of the ones who did talk about these measures that were brought up before and weren't voted on by the legislature, saying we need to take, I mean, he talked about kind of three levels, I think. One of them was school safety procedures, other was mental health. Third was these bills. So he's talking about a multifaceted approach, but, you know, I don't know that what's happened is changing the dynamic in the Capitol. What I was told when those gun bills came up and weren't voted on, the conservative Republicans would be, if there were an incident, God forbid, that could have been prevented if those laws had been in place, that would be the real risk politically for them. Right?
Right.
So until you see something like that, I don't know what's going to change the dynamic in the Capitol of Republicans saying we think these laws violate Second Amendment rights, and Dems saying we need to make these changes because it makes sense.
Right. And thanks for mentioning Attorney General Call, because let's listen to how he reacted to some of these tragic incidents this week.
We need to look into how we can work to identify threats earlier, and that includes figuring out whether there are investments in mental health programs, social work, and other programs that might help students with mental health issues or other challenges so we can prevent tragedies before they happen. I've advocated for a couple common sense gun safety measures that I think will also help make schools safer. I feel really sorry for our kids that they've got to go to school in this environment.
I was also struck, J.R., there's some very personal connections with this. The governor's two daughters went to Oshkosh West. Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz went to Oshkosh West. And I must say, one of my daughters went to Waukesha South. So this can strike pretty close to home, right?
Yeah, it drives a message. But again, until you see something that could have been prevented, I don't know that there's going to be a change. I mean, did you see anything different in the discussion this week in the Capitol about those two laws?
No. No, but my follow-up question is exactly what has been done with the $60.4 million in school safety grants? How much safer are our schools? But that's a question for another day. Okay, new subject. The deadline was this week for candidates to run in the special election in the 7th U.S. House District. That's Northwest Wisconsin. So, J.R., let's talk about who filed. First, let's talk about State Senator Tom Tiffany. Mm-hmm. He's from Hazelhurst, excuse me.
Now he's in Minocqua, actually.
Oh, that's right. Thanks for the correction. Yeah. And he elected to the Assembly in 2010, the State Senate in 2012. He's a member of the Finance Committee. Any big achievement that he's going to be able to claim in terms of send me to Washington?
You know, he's got a record of working on state issues. DNR was one of his focuses. The mining bill a few years back that didn't really produce a mine, but they changed mining regulations. Those things he's going to talk about. But he's basically been planning for this run for a while. All that changed for him was that the timeline moved. He kind of assumed that Sean Duffy would leave the congressional seat to go run for U.S. Senate or for governor or something else. He was anticipating happening now in a special election. So he's been working this for a while and getting ready for this race.
Okay, now let's talk about Jason Church. He's from Hudson. He's a veteran. He lost two legs serving our country. And he's currently an aide to Ron Johnson.
Yep.
He is. Okay. Any thoughts on his pedigree?
Church has got a compelling story to tell, people tell me. The question is, does he have the time and resources to tell it? Remember this district, okay? This district covers basically northern third of Wisconsin.
It's bigger than a couple northeast states.
It runs from just west of Green Bay to the Mississippi River. Or sorry, actually, it's the St. Croix River, I think, actually, where it touches there, yeah. North of Minneapolis. It dips at some points down toward Mauston. Okay, this is how big this thing is. There is no dominant media market. There is no dominant population center. If you want to get on TV, you have to get the entire thing. You have to do Green Bay, Rhinelander, Wausau, and Minneapolis, which is very expensive, by the way. So you're talking about a difficult approach to reaching the people you reach. And, oh, by the way, it's a February 18th primary. Who's turning out to vote? How do you target those? I mean, there's a lot of – the consultants will make their money on this race, figuring out who's going to turn out in this primary, okay?
Yeah.
Now, the interesting dynamic I've heard about is that, you know, Tiffany has got all this backing from, like, state lawmakers, his colleagues, local folks. But you see in the past couple of weeks that Church has been endorsed by Dan Crenshaw, congressman from Texas, won his seat, I believe, 18. Yvette wears an eye patch, is kind of famous for. Senator Cotton of Arkansas endorsed him. So he's getting this national attention, these national people endorsing him because of that compelling story, right? He's a veteran, injured in Afghanistan in 2012, retired Army captain. So there's that piece. But, you know, it's what's their – the question I heard this week was, what does Church have besides the story, right? He's got to talk about issues.
But it's a powerful story. And let's talk about U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, who, Illinois, she was a helicopter pilot. She lost both legs. She's now in the U.S. Senate. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. But that's the question I've heard. Can Church tell that story and build upon the story with issues? Because Tiffany's been playing this for a while. He's got these networks. People are out there supporting him. And when you have a big district like that and you have surrogates, it helps you tell your story because they're talking to their friends, the local paper, local radio station, and promoting at the same time.
Okay, now let's talk about the two Democrats. Tricia Zunker is the best known. She's from Wausau. She's a school board president in Wausau, and she's a justice on the Ho-Chunk Supreme Court. Thoughts on her?
Look, if you look at this Democratic primary, okay, what you need to know is that when Tricia Zunker rolled out her kind of rollout video, U.S. Senator Timmy Baldwin, U.S. Rep. Gwen Moore, and State Democratic Party Chair Ben Wicker all promoted that video on their social media.
Okay.
What does that tell you about who the favorite candidate is in that primary?
Okay, now let's talk about the other one. Lawrence Dale had lived in across the border in Iron River.
In Michigan. Told me this week he's established a residency in Eagle River.
But on his filing papers in a box office
P.O.
in Eagle
box,
River.
That's for his campaign. So, like, federal law says you must live in the state, not the district, but the state you're running in for Congress as of the election date. So if he were to win the primary, all that matters is that he's a resident of Wisconsin by May 12th of 2020. Looking at the kind of approach from insiders, I think that Zunker is the preferred candidate of operatives. That likely means she's going to get more resources because we're going to give her a campaign.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't mean it's a guarantee, just that she seems to have the preferred profile. And let's be honest, this is a plus 16 or 17, you know, Republican district for Trump, right? Years ago.
Biggest margin, I think, for Trump.
One of them.
Yeah.
Years ago.
In Wisconsin.
It was a Democratic-leaning district back when Dave Obie had it. It was redrawn after 2010.
Obie, 79 to 2010.
More Republican. It is the Trump district, right? It's rural, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly blue-collar. If a Democrat could even come close in this race, it would send shockwaves across the country because Trump needs to maximize his results in districts like this one to win in 2020. The thought is, for Democrats, your best hope is it's a May 12th special election, that you have a lot of energy on your side, and that even though you have a small number of voters, that they are compelled to turn out, more numbers of Republicans, you pull off an upset. However, the thought from both Democrats and Republicans I talked to is that even if you can pull off an upset in May, it's going to be hard to replicate it in November because Trump is going to be on the ballot. Now, with impeachment and everything else, I make no predictions about what's going to happen now in November. Okay?
Neither one of us is going to make an impeachment.
But let's just say that Trump's numbers are as is right now. Come November of 2020, that district's likely to vote Republican, both for president and for Congress. So for Democrats, it's, okay, how do you approach this race? May pull off an upset or make it close in May knowing that it's going to be a tougher hill even to climb in November.
Okay, and let's recap it this way. The Republican primary, well, both primaries are February 18th, Tiffany versus Church, and the Democratic primary also February 18th, Zunker versus Hale, and as you said, JR, the general special election May 12th. Do I have that right?
I believe so, yes.
Got it. Okay, let's turn to Scott Walker has been more out of the picture than in the picture in the 11 months since leaving office. But he spoke to the Milwaukee Press Club last week, talked about a number of issues. Mm-hmm. Let's highlight three of those issues. Let's hear what he told the Press Club, please.
What we saw in the Marquette University poll, I think, reflects it, that people have started, it's starting to wear a little bit thin. People are starting to question, does the opposing party actually have a plan, or is their whole focus just on impeachment? I think that'll backfire. And I think in the end that makes it more probable that the president gets reelected. I don't think any of it's a certainty, but I think the president's odds actually are improved, oddly enough, by just how far the opposing party has gone throughout this process. Well, I'm 22 years younger than the president, so I definitely have time. So time is not a barrier there. I mean, I got to tell you, Tommy Thompson is exactly right. Being governor is the best job in politics in the world. Better than being president, better than anything else you could do. I can safely say between now and the beginning of 2025, I'm not going to be doing any elected office because I've got a commitment there. What happens after that really depends on what's happened. I personally hope Rebecca Clayfish runs for governor. I think she would win, and I think she'd be a hell of a great governor if she was elected.
Let's talk about the three things he said, JR. Number one, I'm not going to run until 2025. A lot can happen. Mm-hmm. I'm 22 years younger than the president. I think he's 52.
Something like that.
Why did he say that?
He's been saying that for a while. Scott Walker, it was interesting. Like, after he left office, he started getting these jobs. Because remember, he's a fundraiser for the National Republican Redistricting kind of organization. Other kind of bodies grabbed like a balanced budget amendment.
Consulting,
group.
Things like that, yeah.
Okay. There's a thought by some people, oh, this is it. He's going to go make this real money. He's going to do this, you know, Young Americans for Freedom, whatever.
Sean Duffy, K Street type thing?
He's going to make money and it's going to leave. I've talked to somebody close to him who said, no. Scott Walker is like a shark. He's always swimming. Got to swim to stay alive. He's a political animal. There is a thought from some people I talked to that he will run again someday for something. The question is what? Like, what is the Scott Walker rehabilitation, right? Does he run for governor someday again? Okay. U.S. Senate? President again? You know, I mean, right. He's got a lot of time ahead of him. The question is, what niche does he fill? And what can he do beyond? Because part of the problem with the presidency in 15 was it grew too quickly, spent too much money, and just basically imploded. It was not a well-run campaign.
Right. He didn't do very well on that first campaign, a debate.
So do you learn lessons from that? What can he do going forward? You know,
okay.
I would not be surprised Scott Walker runs for office again.
You are not surprised then, I wasn't, that he said Rebecca Clayfish is my choice for governor in 20?
I don't know that 20, Paul Farrell,
2022,
Milwaukee County Executive, Kevin Nicholson, former U.S. Senate candidate, Senator Kapinga of Delafield, or U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, maybe enjoyed hearing those comments, because I've heard all those names as possible gubernatorial candidates for Republicans in 2022. It's interesting to people I talk to that when Scott Walker and Beck Clayfish first ran together, it was a forced marriage. Because if you go back to 2010, Republicans like Brett Davis, state lawmaker at the time, who had a pretty decent campaign war chest.
Right.
But he had supported some kind of like an ethanol project in his district or something like that. And that was like, just did not sit well with talk radio in southeast Wisconsin, if I remember correctly. Rebecca Clayfish got a huge boost from Charlie Sykes. He really promoted her. I remember she's a former TV reporter. Started doing stuff with Sykes and his like conservative media outlets. And that propelled her to the nomination. So it was a forced marriage. But to their credit, they've been working very closely together after that, grew closer.
They're much better than Governor Tommy and Scott McCallum, much better than Jim Doyle, Barbara Lawton. They were a team.
So there's
she respected the limits of the job.
If you ever go in the Capitol, in the Lieutenant Governor's office, there is this back staircase to the Governor's office. And there is this kind of wall of windows and a door. There was a time when there were file cabinets stacked across that door.
So you couldn't so get you from couldn't Lieutenant Governor to the Governor's
yes.
office.
I never saw it personally. I was told about that.
Okay.
They're gone now. You can go back and forth.
And you're not surprised that Scott Walker said the President Trump's odds of getting reelected are going up, mm-hmm. given the Democratic strategy on impeachment.
I mean, I heard that theory right after the Marquette poll came out showing some slippage of numbers. Mike Gushay at Marquette, who does the poll presentation with Charles Franklin, talked and raised that question. When I asked people about that, the feedback I got was that there's a parallel, but not quite, because what Walker did wasn't illegal, right? Walker made a policy decision that angered people, and from the time he angered them in 2011 until the recall in 2012, several things happened. One, schools opened that fall. The garbage kept getting picked up.
Yep.
Life went on without like a massive disruption other than for public employees. So the public went, okay, this is not the end of the world. Number two, people felt like Republicans were jazzed up to vote for Walker because they would defend their guy. Democrats jazzed up to vote against him. And people in the middle went, you know what? I don't like what he did maybe, but I also don't like the idea of removing him for a policy decision. Now, this is different because this is something that's accused the president of doing something illegal.
Yeah.
However, the parallel is the same where you get a jazzed up base on both sides. What's the middle doing? And from now until November, who knows where they end up?
That's
the parallel.
Yeah, that's true. New topic. The Elections Commission this week voted 5-1 to ask the legislature to help them clarify the laws over movers. And movers are people that public records show have moved from their address they gave when they voted in Wisconsin. So let's just walk down the issue there. The Elections Commission voted to ask the legislature to clarify voter registration laws, as I said. The issue is when to remove more than, I've heard, up to 230,000 movers from the voter rolls. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has filed suit saying those names must be removed within 30 days, especially because Wisconsin has same-day voter registration. But the commission has said, yes, we recognize the federal effort that tracks movers, but state law is unclear on when names must be removed. JR, the chair of the Election Commission, former Representative Dean Knutson, respected member, ex-member of the Assembly, member of Finance. Mm-hmm. But my question is, even though he voted to ask the legislature to help clarify, I have real doubts whether the legislature can enact something in time for the quickly coming elections. Spring primary, spring elections.
Something that's going to get signed by Governor Evers?
Yes.
A couple of interesting things. One, the commission made a policy decision already once, right? It said, no, we're interpreting state law to say you have, I think, until April 2021 mm-hmm. to remove people if you haven't responded to this. Now they're asking for legislature for further clarification after making a decision. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but if I were a lawyer, I'm sure I'd seize upon that. If I were a lawyer who's challenging this ruling, I would seize on that and say, well, wait, you made a policy decision. Now you're saying you're not sure that's the right way to do it. That maybe bolsters the case for Will. One of the members, a new member of the commission, said let's let the lawsuit play out.
Voted against it, the only one that voted against it. Okay.
And progressives have a fear of if you're asking Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald to weigh in on these things, look at the record, and this is what progressives, they don't like these things, voter ID, other restrictions on early voting, for example, they don't feel confident that they would look at an expansive view of what state law means, and how do you get the legislature and the governor to agree on anything when it comes to something like this.
Right, good point. Okay, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So vetoes. So this 2-week swipe, we didn't get to talk last week, but Governor Evers now vetoed 11 bills in 11 months, which is not, you know, a huge amount, but it's actually...
Starting with an income tax cut, excuse me.
It's actually kind of up there for governors in their first 11 months. Last one of both vetoes was Jim Doyle with 15, the first 11 months of a year. Now, he's got some work to do to get to Jim Doyle at 54 in 03, or Tommy Thompson in 38 and 87, which is the last time we had governors coming in first year with split legislature, or opposite control legislature. Evers has also now signed 69 bills, but above average. But one veto is getting a lot of attention, and that is this veto of a bill that it's called school directory information, mm-hmm. things like a student's name, that kind of stuff. This bill would have allowed districts to add a pupil's parents or guardian's name to that information that can be released, because most information for students is private. Evers vetoed it. It's a very rare thing in state government. He sent an errata, which is basically a cleanup.
A correction notice.
Yeah. He cleaned up his veto language, saying, trying to fix a couple of things. Republicans were like, look, do you not know what the bill actually did? Like,
he's
why
a former
are you
superintendent
this?
Of public instruction.
So I think an explanation from the governor's office about why they did the errata, but that one's getting a lot of attention because it goes back to this complaint from Republicans of the gov and his staff are kind of sometimes tread water not so well. They feel like they didn't really look at the bill correctly, and they've said we just worked with Republicans, yeah. talked about it. They could have figured this thing out.
Okay. You got a minute each on mixed.
So Sarah Meany,
falling.
Tourism Secretary, I did something this week I've never done in 20 years in Capitol. I covered the Governor's Council on Tourism, an actual meeting.
I've never covered it. Excuse me.
And this is
pardon
why.
My omission.
This is a very, this is, you know, it's an advisory council about tourism, obviously. There was an attempt to elect new officers that was happened earlier this year. It was done originally via electronic vote, via email essentially. It's a secret ballot. It was botched. All right, let's be honest. There were concerns that the way they tried to do it violated the open meetings law. So that opened the door to complaints from Republicans about Sarah Meany, that they complained that she's trying to inject politics into the tourism, that the Evers folks want to talk about diversity in tourism rather than focusing on like what we have to celebrate in Wisconsin. At this meeting this week, Meany said, look, we're going to fix everything. They brought in two attorneys from the Park Administration to advise the council on what's a quorum, how are we supposed to do this, who can vote, you know, all that kind of stuff, and pledged we're going to do new bylaws, get everything fixed. Andre Jacques is a Republican state senator, chair of the Tourism Council, also sits on the advisory council. He kept bringing up these, like, these issues, like, well, what about this? What about this? And I talked to people, and the feeling is that, one, remember Brad Pfaff was just rejected as DATCAP secretary.
Yes.
Scott Fitzgerald earlier said there's something brewing there with Sarah Meany because of all this stuff. And there's a question of would they actually vote down somebody else?
Wow, because she is she's now interim.
Yeah, it hasn't been confirmed yet.
Yeah.
So Jacques seems to lead the charge against her, saying I've got these concerns. The question I asked people, okay, would they really reject somebody else? And the feedback I got was the question really is the tourism industry happy with Sarah Meany? If you get people like in the Dells up north saying, yeah, we liked her plan, it probably she's going to be okay. But just keep an eye on that one because that's when one's mentioned who could be in trouble with the state Senate.
Okay, you got a minute on falling.
All right, so there is no way, there's no way to track the teacher shortage you have in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Nobody keeps a list of, like, job openings. But we have this thing called a temporary license, and it tells you basically who was allowed to go in and teach this temporary license. Gives you an idea of, like, the shortage. The number issued in 2018-19 was more than 2,800. That is a threefold increase the last 6 years. It tells you that we have a teacher shortage. The question is, what do you do about it? Two bills I've seen in the last couple of weeks. One from, remember the whole thing about double dipping? Double dipping is when you're a retired public employee and you go back to work and collect your pension while you're doing it. Republicans don't like that. They put a real restriction on 2013-15 budget. With the teacher shortages, talk about going back to allowing something. Dewey Strobel, Republican from Stockville, led the charge in double dipping pretty much a few years back. He signed on a bill that will allow a retired public employee to collect a pension while working again for a limited window up to 3 years.
Okay.
But it would lower the retirement age, the minimum retirement age for public employees from 59 and a half or 55, to raise it from 55 to 59 and a half.
59, so you'd have to work longer to get full pension benefits.
There is a Democratic bill that basically mirrors the Evers budget provision allowing retired teachers to go back and work while collecting a pension. Does not have a provision about the minimum retirement age, okay? The trouble is, if your Republican doesn't like double dipping, you want something in return for allowing retired employees to go back. That could be the retirement age.
Okay.
If you're a Democrat, you don't like raising the minimum retirement age,
right.
Get sideways with public employees, and you want something to, I don't know if they're going to reach an agreement this session about how to address this issue.
Okay, we only got about a minute left, JR. Just quickly, do you think we'll see next week the report on the federal investigation into reports of sex harassment in the Wisconsin National Guard?
Sure, just sounds quickly. Like it. Doesn't sound like it's going to be good for the Guard either.
Okay. As we look forward, just a couple things. Wisconsin and I will be covering the freedom of speech debate by an assembly committee Thursday at UW Oshkosh. And I'll be interviewing Representative Nygren on the HOPE agenda on Thursday. That's scheduled at least. And go to wisi.org and take our poll, top stories of 2019. Help us formulate our year-end show. And we're going to, just a second. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
We're going to close with a sight of the holiday Christmas tree.
Whatever you want to call it.
Festive sounds that the tree, Capitol, holiday, Christmas, take your choice, will be dedicated today in the Capitol. Rewind.
Rewind, Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.